mixed martial arts and boxing fans, it's time for Fighter's Fury, Inside the Heart of a Champion, with your hosts, Brendan Tobin, Seema, and Tommy Guns. It's time for Fighter's Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Hot damn, happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome on in. It is Fighter's Fury here on 790, The Ticket. It is Tobin flying solo today. No Seema, he is out, feeling a little under the weather. Wish our buddy the best. Come back strong for next week. Action-packed week of news. Action-packed week of action, just straight up, in mixed martial arts and boxing. A lot of things going down. A lot of craziness happening. A lot of things moving around. Last night, we had UFC Fight Night in Tampa. I had some people that were like, are you going? I'm like, no, I gotta be here. What are you talking about? Am I going? What do you think, Tampa's a hop, skip, and a jump away?
Don't you live 5 minutes away from there?
No, man. But then you also have to go like west. It's not easy. It's not like, maybe Orlando. I could probably make that feasibly happen if I was a nut job. But no. I don't know. Like, I was contemplating. There's a bare knuckle fighting coming up next week. And my guy, Lester Silva, he does some stuff with him. He's like, come on, man. Come on up. Bare knuckle fighting. I was like, yeah, I'd love to do bare knuckle fighting. But it's in Tampa. And I don't know, man. Like, when are we going to just bring bare knuckle fighting down here? I swear to God, like, I'd rather, 10 times out of 10, I'd rather just go to something regional down here or
someone's backyard.
I'd rather go watch Dada 5000 if he has a card down here, or, you know, any of the promotions that have something at the Hard Rock or Mikasuki or whatever, XFN or Titan FC. I'd much rather go to that if I didn't have to travel than you could put, like, the biggest UFC card, like maybe outside of like Masvidal. If you told me I could go, like, you know, if you told me work was sending me to Masvidal Diaz, obviously I'd love to go cover that. That's a dream. But, you know, I've been to a lot of the big stuff outside. Like, I'm not hauling to Tampa to go watch a fight card. Now, that's not to take anything away from this card. It's a fun night. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, one of the best women's fighters ever, strawweight queen. Back on top, getting herself a win over the karate hottie, Michelle Waterson. She looked great. She had to gut through some tough stuff, namely a busted up foot. And there was a lot of drama going into this week because, you know, they were saying, oh, there's no way she's going to make the weight. And the weird thing that was about this whole story was the fact that normally a weight cutting issue, that's something that comes like on a Thursday. You're like, oh, no, she's not going to make the weight. We're going to have some drama on Friday. This thing's hitting like early Wednesday. I think it was like late Tuesday, early Wednesday. People are already talking about, yeah, Joanna's in jeopardy of not making weight. I'm like, damn. Like, this thing must have been going horrible from the start. And I was a little surprised that she was going back to 115 because, you know, she had made such a thing about the weight cut. She was one of the ones that had one of those very scary weight cut videos that had come out. So I didn't know what her future was at 115 pounds. And to hear that she was already having issues early on, you were like, oh, this is no bueno. But, you know, they're chalking it up to head games and that they were just playing the whole time, I guess. There were like stories that there were stories about negotiations of changing in weight class and all that stuff. But it was good to see her in there. She looks fantastic. And, you know, there's only two things that really could beat Joanna. And apparently it's weight cutting and Rose Namajunas. But other than that, she's as dynamic as they come at strawweight. She is now in line, I would think, to take on Weili Zhang for the championship. You know, because we don't know, I guess, where the status of Rose is right now. You know, Weili got the easy win over Jessica Andrade. So, yeah, it makes sense. Joanna, you could always sell. She is definitely the most recognizable fighter at that weight class, bar none. And she looked great, man. She looked vintage. She was dicing up Michelle Waterson, bloodied her up with some elbows. You just saw the versatility of her striking really come to fruition. Did have to battle some odd positions where Michelle was getting in the choke and all that. So it was an interesting night for sure. And she gets herself a big win. No, she says she wants the fight in Poland next, 60,000 seat stadium in Poland. Man, let's do it. I'm all for it, man. Do it there. Do it in China. Whatever. I think that's a lot of fun. I think that's a fun matchup they have between the two of them. Weili's very charismatic as well. I think it's a nice little matchup between both of them. But Joanna looked good. Real, real good yesterday. You also had Cum Swanson getting himself a win over Krohn Gracie. Got himself a 3-round unanimous decision. 30-27 on all three scorecards. Really punishing the body. I mean, it was he was like thwapping on that midsection of Krohn. Didn't really get into any too many dicey exchanges. You know, that's why that dude's just one of the absolute baddest men on the planet, Cub Swanson. It's just funny too because it's just like he just keeps trucking along in the UFC. Guys who have been doing it for that long, and you figure, oh, maybe the run is gonna, but no, man, he continues to impress with everything that he brings to the cage. Just an absolute monster and an absolute badass. Highlight of the night, though, had to go to Nico Price. That was unbelievable. I don't know if you saw this stunt, Steve, but he hit James Vick with an up kick. I got to tell you about the up kick. Everybody, that thing's dangerous, man. I mean, nobody gets knocked out cold with an up kick very much. I fear this every time I get my son dressed. Like that he's going to hit me with the up kick and I'm going to be flatlined right onto the bed. Because it's dangerous. You just never see it coming.
You think Leroy said something about the guy getting kicked in the head?
I haven't showed it to him yet. I think he was watching college football yesterday. But bet your ass when I show it to him, he's not going to believe how this went down. And, you know, it's one of those things where you never think it's going to get you. And, you know, everybody's always kind of in – you always wonder why – oh, man, why are you in such a – why are you so cautious about this dude with him on his back and he's going to hit you with the up kick? You really think that's going to work? But when it does work, it looks like one of the most embarrassing ways to get put out. Because you're like, really? You got hit with the up kick? So, like, I could almost buy Leroy's theory with the up kick more so than his non-belief in the head kick. Because the up kick, it just looks like a silly way to go out. But if you really think about getting hit with that, that's absolutely nasty because you're going – because it's a bad mix of you're trying to go down in the midst of the guy springing up with a shot. It's a bad collision course of putting a person out. He got knocked out. He got performance bonus of the night, obviously. So really great performance by him. You had Violent Bob Ross. He took himself a loss to Matt Frivola. It was a split decision loss. People are starting to get Violent Bob Ross all over Twitter. He was like trending all over the night. People were like, what? There's a guy who is Violent Bob Ross. He looks like Bob Ross, but he calls himself Violent. So even with the loss, I still think that he got a lot of shine for last night. People were buzzing about him on social media a bunch. So there's that for him. And yeah, it was a interesting night. You had Mackenzie Dern took a loss. She was out of her first fight 4 months after giving birth. So absolutely badass that she was able to get back into the octagon, but wasn't able to get her hand raised last night in Tampa. And then, looking at the undercard last night, a couple of knockouts. Miguel Baeza, he was I've seen him fight at XFN. I think he's Caramel Thunder on Instagram. That guy got himself a win, so it was good for him. Nice little knockout over Hector Aldana. So that was your night, UFC Tampa. Then you had Alexander Usyk, who was making his debut yesterday at heavyweight on DAZN. And he got a TKO win over Chaz Witherspoon, who withered out in the seventh round and wasn't able to beat the Ukrainian cruiserweight king. This was supposed to be the debut of Tyrone Spong, our guy. And as you guys know, we talked about this last week. He popped on a couple of his tests for trace amounts of clomiphene, which is an estrogen blocker. Now, this is interesting, though. So they took him off immediately. Like, they had no interest in putting this fight forward. And it was just like, oh, adverse findings. Eddie Hearn, he swaggered out quick. He was just like, guess what? Adverse findings, Tyrone Spong. See you, playboys. We out. And it was just like, really? No appeal? No looking into this? Nope. Adverse findings. See ya. Can't get him a license. Don't know what to tell you. And this dude was, you know, Spong was in Iowa, in Illinois as it was, just had his first face-off with Usyk, and they're just like, yep, adverse findings, don't know what to tell you, sorry playboy, we got replacement opponents, 3 to 4 to 5 in line. I was like, really? You have 4 to 5 replacement opponents already for Tyrone Spong? That was quick. What did you have them all on speed dial, like just in case? So Tyrone posted his third VADA test, which had no adverse findings. It had it came back negative, no adverse findings, no clomiphene. It seems like the time on this was, both of the other ones were late September that had the trace amounts of clomiphene. which is something, if you guys needed a reference to, it was the thing John Jones popped for before. It was the UFC 200 drug. It was the one John Jones popped for that got him off the DC fight at UFC 200, and it was the one that Brock Lesnar tested positive for after he fought Mark Hunt. And Mark Hunt ended up suing the UFC for and all that stuff because they said that Brock Lesnar was juiced to the gills. But Spong's test coming back negative, his third test, it is interesting because the MO on this supplement is that it is something that stays in your system 1 to 3 months. Now, a lot of, you know, I've heard a lot of different theories. The one thing that I don't like about the positive test and the system that comes through with this, and I'm going to say it flat. I'm happy to say this with absolute bias because I'm a big fan of Tyrone Spong. I love the dude. He's been very good to our show. So, yes, I do come to this with an echo of bias. I'm not going to try and hide that. But what I don't love about it is I don't love how everything is thrown under the same blanket of steroid cheat, you know, it feels like Tyrone Spong was in the back of every training session, sticking a needle in his butt, you know, trying to Hulk out of his mind like he's Barry Bonds walking into the ring. And we've seen this many a times now with these tests, with the VADA, with, you know, VADA is an interesting thing because it's one of these things where it is a very good testing agency as far as picking up everything. But you almost wonder, like, is it supposed to pick up everything? Like, what is everything supposed to be under the same guys? The other thing with this stuff that's always interesting is if you are a B-side fighter and you get, you know, picked up on something, you're like done. If you're an A-side fighter, let's say Canelo Alvarez, and you pop for something, I mean, the parade that comes out there for the excuses, everybody's like, oh, yeah, man. Canelo Alvarez, clenbuterol, what did he need? A little extra endurance? No biggie. He took tainted meat. There's all this meat problems in Mexico. Completely clean. And you have the whole PR machine behind you. Other point, Eddie Hearn, who is Alexander Usyk's promoter, he has a fighter, Dillian White, who in the fortunes of the British Boxing Commission, when you pop for a test, those things are confidential. So it's kind of held under wraps. So Dillian White's allowed to go fight, win a fight, and the whole time we didn't know that, oh yeah, by the way, just a little adverse finding in his test, but oopsie, it's Britain. What are you going to do? So I think the thing that sucks for a guy like Tyrone Spong is nobody really gets to hear from him other than him having to defend himself, and he goes out there and there's no real machine behind him that's going to give him the opportunity. Heard theories that this guy is, you know, well, maybe he knew that he was going to be in for the long haul of a fight. I guess, look, that comes from a lot of people not watching Tyrone's fights. I've watched every one of his fights. I called one of his fights in Mexico. I think it was his sixth professional fight. I've been to multiple of his fights live, and I've pretty much streamed every other one. But I've seen the guy fight an entire fight. Yeah, not against the greatest competition, but he fought the entire fight with a broken hand and beat the guy with one arm. And so you're in a heavyweight fight, you got one hand, and all of a sudden you do have to rely on your boxing and your skill set and not that thunderous right hand, which is your moneymaker. That's pretty bad. That's a pretty adverse, and that's an adverse situation. That's a tough situation that you have to get through, and I've seen him come through it. So not a guy who I think all of a sudden is cowering in the midst of Alexander Usyk, needing to go and roid himself up to get through a fight. So it's just tough. I just think that it's tough in those situations because the guy who is not the more famous fighter never really has anybody sticking up for him or never really wants to hear the guy out. They just put it all under the brush of cheat, bum, never could do it, juicing out the gills. We also saw this with the cases of MMA fighters where people don't want to hear it. And I do like the fact that we've gone to a system in USADA where these things are heard out. You know, like a guy like Yoel Romero pops on a test for adverse findings. Turns out he took a tainted supplement that was not under the case of USADA. Ends up winning himself a $27 million lawsuit. I don't know if he'll see any of that $27 million because I imagine the supplement company that he won it against, they probably folded. But you know, these things are it's rough that we go in these situations, and you know, if it was Usyk who had the adverse finding, it's probably getting swept under the rug, or they're gonna just put it aside, or they'll find some way to spin it that they have to spin it because that's the guy DAZN wants to build it around. And if it happens to the other guy who has a trace amount of clomiphene in one of his tests, and then the next test pops up clean, they're just like, yeah, but dirty cheat. Don't know what to tell you. And you're kind of just bleep out of luck. So just interesting. But Usyk did get himself a win, so he makes his heavyweight debut. He says that he wants to take the winner of Anthony Joshua and Andrew Ruiz. And I believe by WBO rules, he is allowed as their cruiserweight champion to go up and fight for another belt in another weight class. So we could see that fight in the near future, which will be interesting because everybody with Usyk is wondering, size-wise, how can he match up? How can he stick with the guys who are 6'5", 6'6", have a little bit of thunderous power? Would have been a nice thing to know in the Tyron Spong fight, who, you know, Tyron's only 6'2", but he has probably 6'5 power. The dude hits like a Mack truck. But we don't know. So that's the unfortunate thing about Alexander Usyk going in there and fighting on a guy who had 6 days notice to fight him. I don't feel like you learn that much about the future of Alexander Usyk at heavyweight, other than you know that he brings tremendous boxing skill set to the ring. Not a surprise. He is he's outstanding in that regard. And, you know, we'll find out. We'll see what the future holds for him. We'll be back with more when we come back. Went to Davie this week to speak with a young local top ranked prospect, highly rated top ranked boxer, the youngest person to ever be signed by Top Rank Boxing, Xander Zayas. He is making his professional debut in about 2 weeks' time on ESPN Plus. He is going to be on the Shakur Stevenson card. So big opportunity. They think the world of the kid. They think that he is going to be one of the next young stars in boxing. And that journey starts now. You know, we've spoken to him before as he just signed his contract. But now that he's staring down the barrel of his pro debut, got a chance to speak with him. So we'll bring you that conversation and more of the crazy week that was in fighting on Fighters Fury right after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Welcome back, everybody. Fighters Fury here on The Ticket. You can text show 67974. Texts on The Ticket are driven by Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota. Always appreciate you guys sending it on in. Demetrius Johnson, shout out to Mighty Mouse. He beat Danny Kingad to win the ONE Championship Flyweight Grand Prix. So he has kind of completed his cycle of going over there to ONE Championship and gets to the pinnacle for him yesterday. Also, a big shout out to Kayla Harrison, who trains at American Top Team. She got a win on Friday night in PFL. She had a late opponent replacement 24 hours before her fight, but she won in just 3.5 minutes via armbar. She got on top, delivered some serious punishment, and then snapped in the old armbar. She moves on to the championship of PFL and now has a chance for $1 million and the title. She is the face of that franchise right now. PFL has been fun, man. It has been a fun organization to watch and see everything kind of unfold there. So really, really great by her. Also some news this week as far as some signings are concerned. You had former Bellator champion, UFC veteran Hector Lombard, our guy, love Hector. He is signed with Bare Knuckle Fighting. So he becomes the latest in UFC veterans to sign with that promotion. And I would say that's a very dangerous mix because Hector Lombard hits very, very hard and can put you out with one shot. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings to what the hell do they have? It's not even a ring. It's like a circled ring. I don't even know what you would call it, but to Bare Knuckle FC, I think he's going to bring a nice dynamic there. It's a strange promotion as far as I watch these bare knuckle fights and I'm like, is this going to last? Are people going to be into this? There's been some outstanding ones. Jason Knight, Artem Lobov, they announced that they're going to do the rematch of that fight. That fight was outstanding. It was bloody as hell. It's gross. I mean, people's faces are falling off. I don't know if people are I don't know if people are going to be in the position where it becomes one of the biggest things on the planet. Because I think that's, you know, you had so many people for the longest time didn't even want to get into UFC because they felt it was too violent. Now you're putting on top of it bare knuckle and the slicing and dicing that happens with that. I don't know, but I do think that they're doing the right thing as far as getting these. It's almost like a Bellator thing where you're going to get the old veterans to get the eyeballs on everybody else. So if you're into that kind of stuff, it'll be you see Hector in the near future there. And I believe they have a card coming up next week as well, as we mentioned, in Tampa. But we want to get to this. So I went down to Davie this week to Sweatbox Gym and got a chance to speak with Xander Zayas. Now, he is 17 years old. 17 years old. He is making his professional debut in boxing in 2 weeks' time. But he's making it on ESPN+. He was signed by Top Rank at 16 years old. Youngest signee by Top Rank Promotions, which has a big platform. They're on ESPN. They're partnered with ESPN. So you're going to get a chance to see this guy's journey from the start. But he's from down here, trains down here, and, you know, has a really, really great passion for boxing. You know, big dude for his weight class. It'll be interesting to see what he blossoms into. But they think the world of his skill set, and he's going to get a chance to showcase that in about 2 weeks' time on the Shakur Stevenson card. So we got a chance to sit down with Xander. This is the second time we got to talk to him, but this is the opportunity to get to talk to him right before he now has a fight date in mind and weight to make and all of that stuff that he's going through right now. So here's our conversation with Xander Zayas. All right, welcome back to Fighters Fury. Very excited to be joined by our next guest, Xander Zayas. You are ready for your debut, my friend. October 26th, Reno, Nevada, ESPN+. Last time we spoke, this was all the plan was getting all set, but now it's closing in, man. You have to be super pumped.
You know, it's a great opportunity to fight in a great car of the Shakur and Gonzalez car. It's a loaded car.
Yeah, man.
I'm just very happy to be where I am right now.
Is it surreal like it's this close? Does it feel like, did it get here quick or did it feel like it took forever to get here?
You know, in a way it took forever, but in another way it was quick, you know. Once they gave me the date, that, you know, all, you know, the camp went just fast. Now I'm 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
But overall, it was really quick.
So, like, what are you doing in camp, like, this far out? Like, are you still going hard sparring, or do you feel finally tuned for it? What's the last tweaks before you get to fight night?
You know, now we just cutting some weight.
How's that going for you?
Great. Everything is going smooth, easy. We're doing some, you know, getting sharper now with some techniques that we need to correct. Sparring is going great. I'm sparring Amir Aman, Ivan Vanenshik, you know, great fighters, top fighters. Everything is going smooth and, you know, good.
So seeing you on social media, like, you guys, you do your little hub here at Sweatbox and Davie, but, like, I see you go to the gyms down in Miami, a Tropical Park and stuff like that. What is the switch like when you go to other gyms? Like, does it feel like you get a little bit more amped up because it's not home team? What are those experiences like?
You know, once you go, you know, you go to another gym or you go, you know, it's in your own gym, you always got a game plan. You know, once we spar, we always got a game plan. We always want to work on something. So I don't feel pressure or anything. But yes, I feel pumped up because, you know, I got people watching me, other people watching me. So I know I gotta show up. But overall, we just work on things.
So, but with that pressure, even if there's not pressure on you, I'm sure there's a lot of guys who look at you, you know, you're a top prospect, youngest dude signed by Top Rank, you just turned 17 damn years old. And so there's got to be some people that are like, oh, bullseye right on you.
Oh, yeah,
so
that, you know.
Can you feel the weight of that sometimes?
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, when I spar, sometimes it's just like a lot of people is, you know, I see the people outside sometimes, they're just staring at me. So I know I gotta, you know, do good, show up, look sharp, look smart, and just do what I do.
Has there been anybody in the professional boxing ranks that's reached out to you? Have you leaned on anybody? Because there's a lot of guys down here locally that train.
Yeah. Again, I'll be sparring with Amir Aman, George Kambosos in his last training camp. He's coming back soon. So, you know, I got a good circle around me of great, great boxers. I got a great team. Javier Centeno, my dad Orlando Garcia, my manager Peter Kahn. You know, I got a great team. So overall, everything is going smooth. And, you know, I'm leaning on, you know, some of the great fighters like Amir Aman and George Kambosos.
Do you ask them
I guess, about the process of fight night, because I'm sure you got the boxing stuff down, the skill set, but like being on a television fight and all that stuff that goes with it.
I went to Saul Rodriguez's last fight in Pechanga, and I experienced the whole fight week, you know, how it goes and how smooth it is. So I think I'm ready for it, and it's gonna be as smooth as I can make it.
What stood out to you when you were there? Like, did anything shock you?
I wasn't expecting, you know, people coming up to me,
really?
Taking pictures with me, asking me for, you know,
that's cool.
Autographs. It was really
that
good. It
way.
Was yes. I was excited. I was impressed. I was like, whoa, I'm this is me.
That's
like,
awesome,
you know,
man.
People was asking me for my autograph, so it was awesome. It was a great experience.
That's pretty cool. So like, it was this like at weigh-ins or just in the midst of fight
week?
When did this go on?
You know, at weigh-ins, a couple people reached out, and during fight day, in the fight day, that was when, you know, a lot of people really came up to me. And to me and George Kambosos, because I was right next to George, so they came up to us and just asking us for pictures and, you know, autograph and all that. So it was really a great experience.
Did you get a chance to imagine to meet Bob Arum?
Yes. You know, I sat down with Bob Arum when I went to Vegas. You know, it was a great experience, and you know, he knows what he's talking about. You know,
I'm sure. Doing it forever.
Yeah. He was really excited. For my signing, I was really excited to talk to a legend like Bob Arum, and overall it was great.
So October 26th goes down in your mind. I'm sure you want to execute everything perfectly, but if I could like draw it up, like when you're sleeping in bed, you're imagining the pro debut. How do you picture it going? How do you want, like, if it went in your dream scenario? How do you imagine it going down?
You know, I'm ready to put on a show. I'm ready to show up to the fight. Look smart, look sharp, look strong, and use my boxing skill and impose my will.
How many rounds are they debuting you?
Four
rounds.
Yes.
That's so. I always get nervous for the guys who fight four rounds, because it feels like there's this. It doesn't feel like a lot of time,
yeah.
And it feels like you want to get stuff done quick. So, how do you game plan for that? Like, is it?
You know, it's kind of like an amateur fight, just one round.
Yeah.
You know, but overall, I'm going out there again, looking smart, looking sharp, and doing what I do to get a W.
What did you get to do for your 17th birthday, man? Like, did you get to enjoy it all? Did you get any birthday cake? Were you in the midst of cutting weight?
No, you know, I was cutting weight, so all I did was train. you know, my family took me out to eat something, but overall, I was training.
So are you going to do the post birthday celebration after the afterwards?
My coach, Coach Javier Centeno's birthday is October 25th, day before my fight.
That's awesome.
So the day of the win, we might celebrate his birthday, and you know, after the fight, we might celebrate his birthday again. So we might go out to eat or something.
Well, October 26th, man. ESPN Plus, Reno Nevada, Xander Zayas. Thanks so much for the time, man. We're looking forward to it. We always appreciate you spending time with us, and we're looking forward to watching the debut.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time, man. ESPN Plus, October 26th.
The showman already knows it. Thanks, brother.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Thanks again to Xander for joining the show, man. Check him out. October 26th, ESPN Plus. Xander Zayas making his professional debut. We'll have that up for the podcast. If anybody missed that, it'll be up on YouTube. All the platforms. I've been on our website at theticketmiami.com, all that stuff. Crazy story this week. Obviously, the one that really took the world of boxing by storm was the accident by Errol Spence. All of us, that story broke in the midst of the morning show. And at that point, they were reporting just a famous Dallas athlete or a high-profile person in Dallas. Then, like, I think by the 8 o'clock hour, maybe even the 7 o'clock hour, we found out that it was Errol Spence, whose Ferrari had flipped over. He had been ejected. First, they were just like, he was ejected from the car. We didn't really get a good look at the car. And then it was like, did he go straight through the windshield? Like, what does that mean? Normally, when I think ejected, I feel like the guy went boom right through the glass. But apparently, he was driving a convertible Ferrari, flipped over multiple times. And if you've seen the footage, I think basically everybody who follows fighting at this point has seen the footage because it's been all over the place. There were surveillance cameras that got video of what went down. I don't know how dude's alive. I certainly don't know how he survived this without broken bones. I don't know what his ligament damage is like, but apparently the only thing that seems seriously reported are facial lacerations and broken teeth. I mean, how? It's just bananas. It's very, very. First of all, I'm first and foremost happy that he's gonna be okay. That's first and foremost with Errol Spence. It does, though, like once the story unfolds, it does lead you to ask, all right, well, what was going on that night? And if a guy walks away basically from an accident that bad, you have to make the assumption, and I'm trying to do this with like the most responsibility possible, but you got to make the assumption that the guy was tilted and drinking a lot. Because how a conscious person could walk away from that, like, so there's pretty much is bananas. Like, there's only two ways to go. He either fell asleep at the wheel, or he was drunk, or both. And the fact that he hit a median, flipped over multiple times, and basically walked away with it with just facial injuries. What do you know? There are reports out of Dallas, by the way, that's saying that he is likely facing a DWI charge. So though those things haven't come out yet, because mostly everybody was just concerned for Errol Spence's life, this is the sad part of it and the unfortunate part of it. And look, we've seen it here up close and personal with the tragedy of an athlete down here in Jose Fernandez, who drank too much, had drugs found in his system, took his boat out with friends or close acquaintances, and they all ended up dead. And this is a guy who was at the peak of his powers, had a ginormous athletic future ahead of him, financial future ahead of him. And you think of Errol Spence, you think about, like, man, this guy is on the doorstep of becoming maybe the biggest boxing star on the planet in the next 3 to 5 years. If he continues to win high profile fights and continues to be a good draw on pay-per-view. You know, what is the limit for Errol Spence? And the fact that, you know, 2 weeks after his title win over a fight of the year candidate, this happens is unbelievably, it's unbelievably lucky that he walked out of it okay, but it's also unbelievably tragic that you see that he puts himself in that kind of a position already, because first of all, very lucky himself to be alive. Very lucky himself that he didn't kill anybody. So you're just hoping that, man, this is something that inflicts some kind of change. But it's like a story that we've heard all too much of guys who get to the top of combat sports. They put so much individual athletic sacrifice. Like we heard last segment, a 17-year-old who is starting his career. They put so much work into this. And it's pretty bananas to me to think this kid was 16. When I met him, and he's got kind of the first 4 years, next 4 years of his life mapped out. So it's very stringent. It's very strict. It's very disciplined. Guy can't have birthday cake. He can't go out with his family, worrying if he can go out for Thanksgiving, because he's got to stay in a gettable weight of 147 pounds. Errol Spence has been doing this for a very long time. He finally gets to this what seems like a pinnacle of his career. He's unified welterweight champion of the world. People are starting to consider him maybe better than Terrence Crawford. And then something like this happens. It's just super tragic. And it's also unfortunate how like it just goes too much in line with stories we've heard before. You know, like I don't want Errol Spence to be a cliche. I don't want him to end up in the same path that many others have, because it's just, man, there's so much life there. There's so much potential. And I'm very, very happy that he's okay, and that the most damage occurred to his car and maybe some property. But as we've seen, this stuff is very precious, and it's only a couple choices of people or dynamics or others that if somebody makes that one wrong choice, it can affect the fate of a lot of other people. And he was, who knows if, you know, somebody is standing at a different point for a couple of extra feet, and he could have hit another car, or somebody standing on a corner, boom. It could be a much different story than blessed Errol Spence. It could have been blessed Errol. It could have been Errol Spence, you know, survives crash, kills another, hurts another, hurts himself, kills himself, and you just hope that this is a wake up call, that not only is he lucky to be alive, but now that he has that chance at life, that this stuff stops, because it's just all too unfortunate that we hear this stuff too much, especially with fighters. So full recovery. Hope he gets a full recovery in many different ways for Errol Spence, that's for sure. We also had this story come out this week. This actually is just breaking overnight. That's to bring everybody on a damper to end Fighters Fear today. But there is a story where police are, this is coming from the Irish Mirror, and it says police are investigating the sexual assault of a young woman by a, quote, famous Irish sports star. It says police are investigating an assault claim of a young woman in Dublin on Friday night. The alleged incident took place at a pub in West Dublin around 9 p.m. on Friday evening. The woman is understood to have made a complaint to police on Saturday morning. Irish police confirmed to Dublin Live they're investigating the incident. They said in the statement, Garda and Crumlin are investigating the alleged assault of a woman that occurred Friday at approximately 9 p.m. The investigations are ongoing. There are no arrests at this time. According to the Irish Mirror, the individual concerned is understood to be the same well-known sports star that is under investigation for an alleged rape of a married woman in a Dublin hotel in December of 2018. If you guys aren't up to date on the story, that allegation, as was reported by the New York Times, is Conor McGregor. So media rules in Ireland dictate they can't name the individual when these cases are ongoing, but he is fresh out of Friday. He's fresh out of court on Friday, where he is having his first summons to defend himself against punching an old man right in the face. But again, there's something surrounding Conor McGregor, another incident, allegation, trouble, whatever. All of that stuff is pretty depressing to read, that there's more stuff that could be surrounding McGregor with all that's already been around since he has not been fighting. So, not to bring everybody down for what a there's this also. I forgot this story. This story happened on on Friday night. Headline on ESPN: prominent MMA managers involved in a brief altercation during event. According to ESPN, Ali Abdelaziz, who is Khabib's manager, he represents Kamaru Usman. He reportedly went after our guy, Abe Kawa, Miami, first round management. Apparently, Abe told ESPN that Ali approached, I'm sorry to laugh at this, it's a ridiculous story. I can't believe a grown man would do this. That Ali approached him at the event at the Mandalay Bay and slapped him right in his face. What the hell, man? That's not normal behavior. I'm sorry, man. You can't just go slap a grown man in the face. Slap? Not even gonna punch. Like, do me a solid. If you're gonna hit me in the face, do me the solid of punching me in the face. You're gonna slap me in the face?
He Charles Oakley'd him.
What? So apparently the two got into an altercation. I think that Ali was hit with a citation on this, but that's not okay behavior, man. Imagine Drew Rosenhaus going up and slapping Tom Condon right in the face at an NFL game. Never happened. It never happened. Like imagine Maverick Carter going right up and slapping somebody right, or Rich Paul slapping another agent right in the face. You would never be allowed in the arena again. What behavior is that by somebody to go up and slap a man right in the face? Why? Because your rival MMA managers, really? You're not fighting? You're not in there in the cage? You're out there trying to make money for these dudes.
I mean, this guy also is, you know, he started that incident at the salad bar with Colby Covington. This is behemoth behavior, going out there slapping dudes in the face. Other managers. Jesus. Unbelievable.
Take it easy, man.
Take it easy, man. What are you doing? Going and slapping people in the face. Revoke that dude's credentials. You can't be having a slapper walking around the arena. That's just not a right. I'm sorry. This isn't me sticking up for the Miami dudes either, but it's just like that's not okay.
Think he slapped him with a glove?
Just like a duel? Oh, man. I don't know, man. That's pretty wild. That is bananas. All right. So, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Get ready. In the near future, we're getting Cain Velasquez, Brock Lesnar 2, WWE, Crown Jewel. Shout out. Cain Velasquez is going to do his luchador stuff right on Brock Lesnar's ass. Let's go,
shout
man.
Shout out. Let's do it.
Come on, man. And then Tyson Fury is going to be taking on Braun Strowman. Tyson Fury is a big mother bleeper, man. You see him next to these wrestlers who are pretend big. Like, they're just trying to look bigger. He's just bigger than them all. He's a Goliath. You know what? It would have been like, Tyson Fury would have been good in Carney days. Like, just the world's strongest man. Just a giant of a man. Everybody would have been terrified of him. So.
I'm terrified of him now.
I know. Well, he's got, like, some kind of a lovable asset to him. But I feel like he could have been a good carnival attraction back in the day. You know? Didn't like the old lifting up the barbell with one. That's how it would work back in carnival days, with the type of things that were going down. So yeah, I'm trying to think any other news that I've missed from the week. I think that's about everything, everybody. If you missed any of the show, you can download the podcast. Please do so. Subscribe Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, Radio.com app. Subscribe on YouTube. Look me up on YouTube. Subscribe to that page. We bring you some great fight content there as well. Great interviews with fighters. I always appreciate those guys giving us our time and all of that stuff. So. Everybody have a great rest of your Sunday. Who we got coming up next, man? It's Rashad Butler and
Brian Monroe.
A couple of Canes. Gonna get to get you recapped on the Canes' victory over Virginia. A little upset victory. Finally, big win for Manny Diaz. So those guys will get you all up to speed and get you ready for your NFL Sunday. That is next.